that was good. Been hearing like lots of different kind of music recently, which I enjoy. But haven't done a wrestling theme since, I think, feels like pretty early in the show. So that Cactus Jack, right? Is that what the Cactus Jack iteration right there?
Yeah.
So that kind of, now that I've heard that, it kind of like reminds me of the anger that I faced, you know, in the, I'm still playing, WWE 14, which is a pretty good game. And they got like the three versions of Foley, and they got the Mankind music, and they got the Dude Love music, but they don't have this song.
They don't have the Cactus Jack
song. Yeah, the one song that I would actually like want to give somebody is the one song that they're not bringing in, but they got the corny Dude Love stuff and the Mankind music I never really cared for either. But that's good, man. I haven't heard that in a couple of years.
Good, so I brightened your day, huh?
Yeah, I mean, I need you to kind of wake me up over here, because it's been a rough, like, 4 days, but...
Why has it been a rough 4 days?
Just, like, couple, like, you know, well, Sunday, you know, when you yeah. came over, you know, like...
you're to watch a... To watch a pay-per-view that I haven't been over your house since WrestleMania maybe? Yeah.
And then I was like 2 hours late. Yeah. But yeah, because I worked like...
You're working, though.
Six in the morning to... Well, I get there about 7, right? So, till probably about 6:30 in the afternoon, which is cool.
You're Green Egg Grilling. That's on your Twitter handle, right?
Yes. In that case, I wasn't grilling. I was like assisting and setting up and tearing down. We had a food festival, and then.
And you didn't cook anything?
No, because I got to work. There's other people cooking.
I mean, what'd you do? You just glad handed everybody?
Yeah, pretty much.
You're like, hey, hi. Hi. You want to check out this Green Egg Grill? Let me show you all the features.
No, you don't. All these people have eggs. There's nothing.
He said, "What would it take for you to have this Green Egg Grill in your car when you're driving away?"
And that was what I did on Saturday when I worked at the store. Okay. But on Sunday,
What will it take?
What do I got to do to put you into this grill today? Huh?
That would work, I think.
That would.
That'd be good. What would be your name?
Vinny, I suppose. If I'm going with that accent,
better have my. Better have my lasagna or something?
It's the Green Egg Lantern.
Better have my cannoli?
Yeah. Hey, we got cannoli too, huh?
Yeah. You should do that.
I should. And then, so there was that, which was good. And then yesterday, because one of the, they got like this celebrity chef chick to come in and do a class at the Egg Fest on Sunday. And then kind of in conjunction, she taught a class at the store.
Who was the, as you put it, the celebrity chef chick?
Her name is Linky.
Linky?
Linky.
And what makes her a celebrity? Because I never heard of Linky.
She's on the...
Is she on the internets? The interwebs?
Well, that too, I suppose. But yeah, she is. She's actually on Twitter. But then she's been on a couple of like those like chef competitions.
Like Chopped?
I don't think she was on Chopped.
American Chef, or what do they call that?
It was like Chef Star or something like that.
Yeah.
It was like a competition one, and then saying she's going to be on, I think she's on another one also, which I don't know.
Were you over fucking whelmed when she showed up?
I don't really watch those shows. I didn't know who she was coming into it. But
is she cool?
Yeah, she's cool.
So she doesn't have a big old chip on her shoulder?
No, she was like
she's
really
down
fun.
To earth?
Yeah. She's like, well, I'm not want to get into the whole bio, but she's from South Africa, and then in her teens, she moved to the United States.
She talked with an accent?
Yeah. She's cool.
How's the South African accent again?
It's pretty similar to an Australian accent, but just like slightly off.
I'm not even going to try to do an Australian accent.
No, I can't do it right, but she was cool. She was cute.
My accent usually revolves around like a really bad, like drunk English accent. Like, all right, now, hey, yeah, get over there.
Your only Australian accent, I believe, was the Bushwhackers.
Yeah. Whoa.
Yay.
Yeah. And throw another shrimp on the barbie. Yeah.
Why don't you throw another shrimp on the barbie?
Good day, mate.
Yeah. Mick Dundee from Australia.
Yeah, it's pretty good. Yeah. You're throwing
out today. I can't do South Africa.
I can do it.
So anyhow, so like she taught another class on Tuesday, but for me, you know, I had to work, so that ended up being a day where essentially I worked from 6 in the morning until we got done with that class, or cleaned up and everything around 11 last night. So, like, out of, in the span of 3 days, I had, like, 12 plus hours.
You got tuition already?
No, that was why it was a long-ass day.
So wait. You went there at 6 in the morning?
I went to go to school at 6 in the morning.
Okay, and after school.
I worked until 2:30, and then I drove out there. I was there by 4.
And that was kind of like me on Friday.
Yeah.
Friday, I drove to Salinas, and then some company asked me to sample their strawberries and raspberries, and so I had to go to a grand opening of the store. And, like, hey, you want to try these berries? Hey, they're sweet. It's free. Take it. Go ahead.
And they look around all crazy. I'm buying this newspaper.
What are you doing? I'm buying this newspaper. that's good, man.
Yeah,
that's good.
So
I got to wake you up.
Yeah, well, I mean, it's not going to be 2 hours. I mean, I'm glad to be here. It was like...
It's been a long time since those days? Or?
Well, it's just, you know, we as much wrestling as we watch, you know, generally, like, you're watching it here, I'm watching it at my place, and because you don't get to come over for all the pay-per-views, so it's like, I kind of look forward to when we get to watch a little bit of wrestling together and then the podcast afterwards, because we can, like, I know what you've seen, you know what I've seen, right?
It's really sweet, man. This is the softer... gentler side of Better Have My Donuts over here.
Yeah, well, someone was telling me, you know,
pretty soon I'm not going to be called Bad News Ramen. It's going to be Good News Ramen.
Yeah.
Happy Feelings Ramen. Touchy-feely ramen. No, not that.
That'll get you arrested, so...
How about stanky ramen? Yeah,
stanky leg ramen.
Two-day-old stanky ramen as you grab your halls of defense.
I gotta stay hydrated over here.
Hydrated? All right.
Word.
So, I'm gonna make a little confession. I really didn't watch Raw. I tried to twice, and I fell asleep both times. That's how busy I've been. So it's been a rough go. But
was that a reflection of the show or just
a little bit of both? I mean, the in and outs of watching Raw, there just seemed to be a lot of talking.
Mm-hmm.
So every time I woke up and someone was talking again, I was like, well, when's the match gonna happen? So but it seemed like it really didn't I don't think anything major happened on Raw, right? I mean, Roman Reigns had a fight three times.
So that was,
and he won all three times.
Right.
He won all three times.
He won all three, yeah.
Really?
Well,
wow.
Well, I mean, I have to say there was some question though at the end, because the main event he fought Bray, and you know, I could just as easily see them putting Bray in a Money in the Bank match. Bray doesn't lose too often, and Roman won clean. So, like, you know, as much as, yeah, you would say, yeah, it's just some, like, you know, one show storyline hurdle for him to get over. The culmination of it was actually a match where you could have gone either way, and honestly, either way, I wasn't going to be too disappointed. But yeah, it was fine for me too, because one is like he is you can kind of feel momentum slightly getting back on his side, which is good.
People are actually cheering him again.
Yeah, and the other thing is, like, they took him away for a week, right? You know, he wasn't on the pay-per-view, he wasn't on Raw, so maybe just that little bit of, like, de-emphasizing him when they're able to bring him back, maybe that's a little bit of why, you know, he's seen. I think the association that he's getting with Dean is helping him quite a bit as well, because Dean's still extremely popular, which kind of sucks for Roman. Like, I mean, I think a lot of the stuff that people heap on him is unfair. And then now, you know, I mean, I guess any way he gets over is good. So even if it's, you know, putting him back with Dean is going to make him better. I never thought it made sense to split all three of them up in the first place, right? If Seth turned on him, that's one thing. But it never made any sense to me, really, that Roman and Dean would also decide they had to go in their separate ways. I think it makes sense that they're not necessarily a tag team, but have some kind of association. So like, I'm all for that. I think they work well off of each other.
Well, Roman needed to be paired back up with Dean Ambrose. I mean, he lost so much momentum when he got hurt. And then, of course, I mean, we've said this, you know, the blueprint of how Roman Reigns fell from grace, but you know, it was kind of the whole thing too quick, too soon, and winning the Superstar of the Year. So they actually did it right, but I don't want to take away from what Roman Reigns accomplished before he started getting all the backlash, because they're using, and check this, this is professional right here, but they were using Roman Reigns to really boost up Cena when Cena was kind of in a, really didn't have anywhere to go, and he had a ton of hate on him for whatever reason, just because he's John Cena. But you know, Roman Reigns was one of those guys you could pair him with someone that needed a little push because Roman Reigns was so hot. So it's now it's turnabout. You know, Dean is. It's funny. Dean has gotten bigger and bigger and bigger, but there hasn't been a push for him. They just put him in spots. He's delivered, and then now he's on the main event scene, where Roman kind of had a similar one, but then they pushed that Royal Rumble way too fast. They put him up against Daniel Bryan, and people wanted to see Daniel Bryan win the Royal Rumble, and he just fell in the water after that. But Roman Reigns still, I mean, it's very easy for, I could ask, like, oh, does Roman Reigns need someone to make him big? I don't think he does, but I think at this point in time of his career, he does need, like, a guy like Dean Ambrose. And I think it sets up for a possible heel turn as well. You know, I think there's that storyline that's kind of an undercurrent that Roman might become a heel and maybe align with someone or turn on Dean. And I think that's somewhere in the coming or offing as well, and I'm not really opposed to that either.
I was kind of thinking along similar lines, but I could think maybe it would be Dean that would do the turn. I mean, I think with those guys, you can go either way. And I think that's kind of good in that, you know, Roman's been put in a pretty high position at this point, and they have this kind of balance to work where, you know, he's not going to get his title shot anytime soon. I think Seth's going to have it for a little while. If not, I mean, it seems like Brock's coming back into the picture pretty soon and stuff like that. And, I mean, who knows what's going to happen with Kevin Owens with how hot that guy is right now. But you got it's a tightrope to walk with Roman because you got to keep him looking strong but not put him into that title picture. So, like, how many things can you really do with him? Like, can he win a Money in the Bank? Like, I don't know, because then what, he's going to sit there with the briefcase for 8 months? I mean, a guy like him would cash it in. So, like, it could give something else to do with him and Dean. That could be a really good program, obviously. Like, you know, they got a really good chemistry together, and where, you know, it's still important, but it's not directed towards him, like, going towards the title. So, like, yeah, something like that between, like, whoever goes heel to face, I don't think it necessarily matters. But that's an angle that could happen.
When they introduced the Elimination Chamber, there's a little bit of backlash because it was right after another pay-per-view before that. And then now you have Money in the Bank 2 weeks away as well. Both of these pay-per-views are ones that I want to see. I'm actually coming over to your house again if you're not gone for half the time, which wasn't your fault. It was okay, you know, but it didn't feel the same because, like, you know, like, I think when me and you and Xavier are sitting in your oldest son are watching wrestling, you know, because I brought my two girls, and they probably lasted up to the Kevin Owens match, and then after that they stopped and stuff watching, and you could tell they were kind of bored. But I want to talk to you about a couple things, because we did see that Kevin Owens match. I saw it twice that day. I watched it I didn't watch the replay, but I rewound it so you could watch it. But you did see Raw, correct?
Yeah.
Okay, so one thing I want to say about what I've liked about Kevin Owens, and we can pontificate on this later.
Did you see his promo on Raw? Was that one of the things?
Yeah, okay, I did see it. Right, so, cool. One thing that I do like about him is that whenever he's involved with Cena, he's not waiting for Cena to do something. I mean, we can talk about the match later, but he doesn't wait for John Cena's little punchlines. He's not in awe of John Cena. He is one of the only few wrestlers that I have seen this side of probably CM Punk that can go back and forth with Cena. And I didn't even say even better than The Rock, because The Rock is always trying to one-up each other with their little gimmicks. But Owens can say what he wants to say. He says it very concisely, and he just does everything right. Like him walking out, you know, walking out of the ring after everything happened. That's his character. It doesn't seem like he's trying to be this character. It seems like this is who he is. And I know this isn't, I mean, he's playing a role, but the way he plays it seems very real to me. One thing I did that kind of bothered me a little bit. I mean, I was kind of like on the rope with it, you know, like either way, like I like what happened, but at the same time, when Cena started pointing out in the crowd and stuff and started pointing at everybody, and then he points out that kid, you know, that's wearing a John Cena thing and says that I'm beating cancer. I thought that was a really powerful moment in the show. I mean, you know, big ups to that kid. you know, with the sign and stuff and everything, and you can tell even like when they show the camera on him and everybody started like cheering for him, the kid kind of broke down a little bit. But the problem that I had with it was that it would have been just a nice thing to do, but I really felt that Cena kind of involving that in terms of why people like him as compared to a guy like Kevin Owens, and using that kid's kind of illness or you know, using his cancer to kind of prove his point, I thought it was just really poor form, and that's why I'm kind of on the fence. Like Cena didn't do it on purpose, you know, and you know he kind of said like, you know, told the kid like, you know, keep on fighting, never give up, and I think Cena's being real at that point, but just kind of like to use that in terms of to prove his weak ass promo, whether it was weak or not, but to kind of include this kid's fight really kind of, I don't know if it demeaned it for me, but it bothered me. So I mean, did you think that through, or it was just kind of a thing in passing?
So my first thought was, is this kid a plant? That's the first thing I'm thinking. And I'm still kind of on the fence. That was one thing I was going to ask you. So you're thinking that shoot, you think that's legit, or you haven't?
If it's a plant, it's one of the worst plants of all time. I mean, you know, I mean, every single person in this world has been affected by cancer in some way, whether it's a loved one that they've lost or whether they've dealt with themselves. So I don't think it would be a plant. I just think that's, I mean, that's, I would have a real serious problem if that kid was a plant.
I mean, I suppose I'm pretty cynical about wrestling and stuff like that. I wouldn't put it past him. So, like, let's just take at face value that it's real. So I'm going to, I agree with mostly what you said about Kevin Owens, because like that was one of the things, like the big takeaways I had with him and Cena the first time they met in the ring. I thought like Owens' promo was really strong to start with, and then this time like he did kind of let Cena, he just kind of allowed Cena to ramble on about like everything that was good about him, and that was kind of waiting like, hey, you know, Owens, when are you going to cut this guy off? Because so I kind of felt like he didn't do that where I was kind of expecting him to. But
well, let's take baby steps here. I mean, you know, I mean, Kevin Owens is still pretty new. I mean, let's not expect the world from him right now.
But it was just like Cena was taking a bunch of personal shots at, yeah, Owens and weak ones at that. I don't think it would have taken much for Owens to jump in and retort. Because the thing that I was thinking the whole way through is like when Owens came out and he basically, the crux of his promo was like, okay, you know, this guy's got a bunch of catchphrases and a bunch of gimmicks, and he's gotten pushed by the machine. And then Cena came down, and true to form, he just spewed cliche after cliche.
Vitriol.
While claiming that none of them were cliche and all of them were really real. And that was kind of like, you know, Owens got him right there. And basically Cena was proving Owens' point for him in that situation. But he still got the crowd going all crazy, or at least half of them, like, oh yeah, John Cena is saying that he never gives up and this and that. I'm like, dude, do you not see that like everything that Kevin Owens just said is exactly, John Cena comes and he walks right into this trap, really. And it's kind of like,
well, I mean, you stop believing in the common sense of fans, though, right?
Yeah.
Okay.
But it's just, I mean, I know I can see it, and I know they can't see it, but that's one of the things that's really disappointing about Cena.
They can't see him either, you know?
Word life.
Yeah. Thug life.
Well, that's one of the things that's, like, disappointing about a guy like Cena is, okay, whether the fans can see it or the fans can't see it, like, guys that were really, like, at the top of their craft could always, as we say this a lot, they could react to what's being said to them, right? So, like, a guy like The Rock, for example, in his heyday, or Ric Flair, or someone that was really good on the mic, like, you know, with stuff that wasn't just completely scripted.
Stone Cold
would have been great. He would have like gone off script and then been able to go to some other promo that didn't involve him just sticking to never give up and hustle, loyalty, and respect and all that. But that's all John Cena had. So even though, like, basically Owen just called him out and said, hey, you know, all you do is come out and spit this, that, that, and that. Man, John Cena came down and proceeded to spit all of those cliches while telling him that he didn't have any cliches. I just found that to be pretty weak. And for anyone that didn't see through that, because then he's just straight pandered to the kids and stuff in the crowd, which is what even Owens was saying, like, you know, all these kids are going to cheer you when he comes out here. And then that what's he do? He gets in the ring. He's like, oh, look at that kid over there. Look at that kid. Look at that kid with the Cena shirt. Like, he's just going through exactly. And, I don't, you know, yeah, people, whatever, the masses don't see it. The unwashed masses don't recognize it. But, I mean, I would think if for no other reason than, like, personal, professional pride, Cena might want to try to, like, come with something a little bit different, and he just doesn't have the ability to do it.
Well, he's never been challenged to do anything different, right? He's never had like, a big star from another promotion that he's kind of been in the running with. He's never had to have a major superstar that he's had, within the company that hasn't been held down.
Yeah, there's never been...
I mean, he's had CM Punk.
There's never been a threat to take him from the number one spot in like ownership's eyes, right? There's plenty of guys that are better than him, but it was always his spot has always been protected, so there's no need for him to do that. But still, that's what I'm saying. Even the guy like Ric Flair, who had his spot, right? You know, he wouldn't just let some guy come in and outwork him on a promo, or The Rock, or Stone Cold, or any of these guys. Even though their spots were secure, you know, if someone came out and said something that kind of got into him a little bit, they weren't going to go back and just kind of continue to recite whatever the speech that was written for him.
Well, you can draw a perfect comparison with Stone Cold and even Triple H and The Rock, where you had three guys that wanted to be number one in the business, and they played the game the right way, where they're in Vince's pocket, and they could challenge each other and on the mic or whatever it is. And even what made them so good was they didn't have to have a program with each other to do it. You know, all three could have separate programs, and whoever they were facing, they could just tear them to shreds. And then on the off chance that these two guys did face each other, you know, then they could go into each other and it delivered. Like Stone Cold and The Rock on the mic going against each other, it delivered. They've done it like two or three times. They did it once when they're fighting for the Intercontinental belt before they were really established. But, you know, it's you know, we can sit here and say, you know, well, John Cena's protected, he's never had to do this, he's never had to do that. But there's been no superstar that has been able to manipulate corporate where they could try kind of get what they want to do, or, you know, and say what they want to say, or try to challenge John Cena. And I don't know if it's corporate squashing it. I think it's a little bit where corporate does squash it. I mean, because you had a guy like CM Punk who couldn't be touched on the mic. He couldn't be touched in the ring, but he was always second fiddle to John Cena, even though he had that extended title run. And whenever it seemed that he tried to use the power that he had by being the best talker, by being the best match guy, they found ways to squash him, or they overworked him, or, you know, got to the point where he just quit out of frustration. So what's refreshing about Kevin Owens is that he's doing all this stuff, but at the same time, he's playing the game right now. I mean, he's a young guy. He doesn't have a lot of pull in the back. Cena has found it unto himself to put the guy over, which he did. He put him over cleanly, and I thought, you know, it's Cena over the past year. I'm not saying I've appreciated what he's done, but I can see what he's trying to do. At least it's not the same superhero Cena that always wins no matter what. Now, I don't know what's going to happen, you know, over the course of this Kevin Owens thing. Yeah, but
I'd say that remains to be seen.
It remains to be seen. But at the same time, he's, you know, Cena's been doing jobs for people. And the only thing that I really have to say is I don't know if I like the jobs that he does for people. I don't know if I enjoy that type of match. Now, you never answered that question about the cancer kid. So if
what?
Well, you just said that you thought he was a plant.
I said I'm 50-50 on it, but I would answer the question proceeding as though, let's just assume that the kid was legit.
Okay.
And then I agreed with you.
Okay.
And I thought that...
I just want to hear that I agree with you. Okay, we can move on.
Okay.
Yeah. I just want you to say that I was right.
Okay. from a certain point of view.
From a certain point of view? God damn it, Luke. Just go fight Darth Vader and shut the hell up.
So we talked about that little segment, which was, you know, I thought was, like, noteworthy, right? Because I thought there was some good stuff, and then there was some stuff that wasn't so great, and then there was some kind of stuff that made you think, like, how much of this was shoot and how much of it was kayfabe, right? But, I mean, I think what we should really get into more was the match that they have on the pay-per-view, on the Elimination Chamber, which I thought was a pretty good damn match. I mean, I walked in, you know, you pretty much told me match of the year or candidate right now. And so, I mean, that's high praise as the fake Nick Cage would say on SNL. So, what did you like about the match? Why did that stand out to you, like, immediately as a contender for match of the year?
Well, I think any good match, any match that is going to be contender of the year or whatever it was, you have to have walking into the match not knowing who's going to win or lose. You might have like an inkling of who's going to win. I kind of felt right before the pay-per-view started that Owens would lose, but then within like the first 2-3 minutes of the match, I kind of felt that Owens was going to win. And what I liked about that match was that, you know, John Cena does not have a match. I mean, he does have a match, and it's a very boring match where you kick out of a finisher here and there and everything. And that's really, I don't like the direction John Cena matches are going. I was listening to Jim Ross's podcast, and he was kind of talking about Elimination Chamber, and he was saying, like, you know, everybody's kicking out of all these big finishes, all these big moves. And he's like, and I don't think that's good for wrestling, because what's it going to take for a guy to, if you can't win from a superplex or a powerbomb, or, and he listed something else, what will it take?
A DDT?
Yeah, he said DDT, yeah. I kind of agree with that, but at the same time, as you know, that any John Cena match that's going to be there, and this isn't just a John Cena, this started with Hulk Hogan, you know, kicking out of a finisher. Now you're kicking out of multiple finishers or multiple impact moves. But the storytelling has to be there. Not the storytelling leading up to the match, but the storytelling within the match. I'm watching this match, and it wasn't a John Cena match. It was really kind of a Kevin Owens type match. And what I really think, New Japan being on TV, what I think it's done is I think it's made. I look at the top guys in WWE, and now they're starting to trade elbow shots and punches. They're going back and forth, and that they're having, you know, nice little spots here and there, which I never saw before until New Japan started doing it. Because when New Japan does it, that's just a great spot. I mean, I think it accomplishes two things. One, it slows the match down. You know, it's going to lead up into something, into the next kind of progression of big type moves. But I think it gives the wrestlers a breather just to kind of calm down, just to try to reestablish the story. So I like that. I like that aspect of it as well. And what I started liking was that it really feels like a Kevin Owens match to me. This felt like it was a Kevin Owens match. It wasn't a John Cena match. John Cena was the general in the match, but he was adapting to Kevin Owens' style, which I'll give John Cena a lot of credit for. But what I liked about it was once we got past all of the kind of John Cena type moves and stuff, I knew what moves Kevin Owens was going to do. Like, I knew he was going to do something off the top rope. I knew he was going to do his throw up, you know, his lift up power bomb. He even did a variation of a Phoenix Plex or a Phoenix power bomb. And we're going to talk about that later on too. So I was just kind of I was going, okay, so, you know, John Cena got his big moves in. He got in his really weak springboard
lock.
Well, yeah, he did like 10 shoulder blocks.
Oh, the springboard stunner.
The springboard stunner, and Kevin Owens. Once he did the springboard stunner, and Kevin Owens kicked out of that, I knew Kevin Owens was going to win. It's just kind of a matter of like, well, I didn't know, but Kevin Owens kicking out of these things and not falling into the traps of a John Cena match where I get pissed off because it's just a weak finish. I was kind of getting to the point like, okay, whatever happens now happens. And then Owens was able to do an attitude adjustment, you know, against Cena. I thought that was a nice spot right there. Mm-hmm. I think the only problem I had with that match was when Owens, the first time he went on the ropes and he did a kind of a springboard moonsault, and John Cena moved out of the way for that. I was like, you should have taken that. And then it went right into, I think, the attitude adjustment. Owens kicked out, and I was like, okay, let's see what happens now. And then he throws in that crazy, it wasn't a superplex, it was kind of a...
Oh, it was like the fisherman on the middle rope.
Yeah, yeah. And he does that move.
That turned the match.
Yeah. So he does that move.
The package power bomb was really nice.
Yeah, and then he did the Swanton bomb as well. So it really showcased what this guy did.
That Swanton was really nice because he did like the kind of hop up to the rope and then did like the jumping turnaround before he Swanton. I thought that like that showed a ton of athletic ability and agility for a guy that doesn't look like a physical specimen.
And that's really, you know, and I wanted to talk about why we like Kevin Owens, but. But then, you know, just like the whole kind of Cena does this crazy clothesline on Owens. Owens sells it with the flip and stuff, and then within about 20 seconds later, the match is over. And the whole thing is, so, you know, you throw against the ropes, Owens does the power bomb, you know, the throw up power bomb again, and the match is over. And I'm just kind of sitting there going like, is that it? I mean, not really like, okay, I was like, is that it? Is that all you guys can do? But I was like, the match is over.
Yeah.
And then I just really appreciated the moment of just kind of, it was fun to see the crowd's reaction, because the crowd's reaction was just like, it came out of nowhere. Mm-hmm. And then I'm sitting going like, well, out of all these moves, his power bomb is probably the weakest move he has. And he did a lot of good moves though.
That power bomb is pretty fierce, man.
No, it's a nice power bomb, but you know, it's kind of the whole thing was like he did all these other moves that I was really impressed with. And then then you ended up with that power bomb. And granted, there was two of them, but it was just kind of this thing where it just ended, and I'm just sitting there going like, because I was just sitting in the wait, okay, what move's going to happen now? How is John Cena going to kick out of it? And then I know I'm going to get pissed off when John Cena kicks out of it. And then he does his weak setup, a weak setup here and there. Then he does the AA and he gets the 1-2-3. So I was getting prepared to get pissed off. And when it was over, it was just kind of like a sigh of relief. And then I really got to enjoy what just happened. And then Owens gets on the mic and he tells him he's like, your time's over, my time is now. You know, like the champ is here or something like that. So. Just across the board, just everything, you know, the lead up to the match itself, and then Owens getting that last dig at the end, I thought it was great.
I like Owens' theme song too. I think his entrance song fits him really well. I know you're big on that, like the entrance and how it fits. I think the song.
Wait, with Owens, I don't even think about his entrance or his song, dude.
Well, his entrance is pretty straightforward, but yeah. I just like him coming in. But no, I like the song. It's got a good like. You know, a lot of things with some of these things, like these songs, they have like a little something before it gets into the music, to where, you know, like as soon as you hear that first riff, you're like, okay, you know, it's time, this guy's coming out, and he has that whole beginning has that little effect to it. And then I just like his whole demeanor. It's good. And the match is great. I didn't listen to the Ross podcast, but yeah, we've been kind of saying that for a while. Like, you know, what do you do when you guys kick out and they just kick out of, like, all you can, you know, unless you can get more creative. And that's kind of what Cena does. Like, well, it'll be better if I kick out of five finishers this time, you know. Like, at what point does it become ridiculous, right? But more so, I think, and it's, for me particularly, like, I'm a big fan of the powerbomb. And the powerbomb has kind of gone the way of the dinosaur in recent years. And even the rare guy that uses it. It's just like a move, right? And so for them to find, to if they're going to really kind of stick with this and have this be like a protected, like legitimate finisher in the WWE right now, I mean, I think it's really good, because nobody does it anymore, right? It's been gone out of the WWE at least for a long time, and so, you know, maybe there's like benefit to it that now that they bring it back, that is the impact that it has, because he beat him clean, and then, like, that's the thing. Like, you know, I think if people were thinking that Owens had a chance to win this match, thinking that most of them would have believed that there would have been some kind of a chicanery,
so shenanigans.
Yes, and shamrocks. But he beat him clean, like, no question about it. So, I mean, I think it's really good. Now, my concerns, and this kind of can go back into, like, what we were talking about before we actually got into this match. Okay, you're talking about, like, you know, John Cena doing jobs and putting people over. I can't really say yet that he did do a job or put this guy over. I mean, clearly he did a job in, like, the literal sense. But, like, it's still, right now, we're still within John Cena formula phase. And you go right back to Rusev for the prime example. They start to build this feud, and he loses to him on the first one. And then he always comes back and wins the next two out of the three. And so that's kind of the position that we're in now. Yeah, it's great, and I'm very happy. I'm not trying to be cynical. I'm very happy that Owens won the match. And I think there's a lot of, like, if you break it down, I think there's a lot of reasons why it makes a ton of sense that Owens should win that match. But there's also a lot of sense to him continuing to have John Cena's number, where I'm not convinced that that's going to be what it is, because every John Cena feud, that's what it is. It's like, this really
failed. You can't say there's a ton of reasons why Kevin Owens should win, and there's a ton of reasons why. I mean, you got to kind of say why.
Okay, well, one, it legitimizes NXT, okay? If he's the NXT champion, which is the top belt that NXT has, and John Cena is the United States champion, which is realistically the third highest rated belt that they have, maybe you could argue second right now just because he's doing more with it than what's going to happen with the IC belt. Having the guy that's the best performer on NXT come in and be able to beat a guy like John Cena on Raw means that NXT is legitimate, okay? So that's one reason. If he continues to win, it continues to make that belt, and any guy that holds the belt later on down the line, that's something that they can say, hey, this is the NXT champion, and you got NXT champions that have walked into WWE and beaten a guy like John Cena, right? And that's a legitimate claim. Those broadcasters are completely incompetent and probably miss something like that. But that's something, except for Graves, I like Graves, that's something that they can hang their hat on, and it's legitimate. The other thing is, there's no reason, according to what WWE's general formula is, to push Kevin Owens to the main roster and into such a high spot on the card on the main roster this fast. Okay, you have a guy that's still relatively new. You can milk the hell out of this guy. He's really talented. He's really popular. He hasn't been in NXT for very long. If you want to do the slow play, you can build up another year, maybe year and a half, making this guy look like an unstoppable, unbeatable force, and then slow play that build into Raw. So for them to bring him so quickly into Raw, it just doesn't make sense that, like, you have this guy that you can keep here kind of.
Is that what you want from?
I like it, but what I'm saying is.
But you're not advocating that Owens stays on NXT for another year to be an unstoppable force.
No, not. I'm not saying that.
Because I think that's the. To me, that's the thing that what I like about Owens so much is that. I don't want him to be an unstoppable force. I don't want him to be like a Rusev. I mean, this guy, you know. What I like about Owens is that he talks a lot of trash. He can get in the ring and he can take care of business. But then at the same time, there's something about him where he's very calculated with what he does. He'll turn around and walk out of the ring, even with his matches with
Sami Zayn.
With Sami Zayn, there's always a point where he would never face Zayn one on one. He'd always have to have the upper hand. The second that he got the upper hand, he would exploit it. And that's what I really like about Owens, and that's the guy that I want to see. And that I think he can be moved up right now because I think his character is set.
Yeah, no, he didn't need to go to NXT at all. What I'm saying is the way WWE usually handles these things, they milk it for all it's worth. And when you take a guy that you can, like, build into this character that you want him to be, and all of a sudden you really quickly throw him into a program with John Cena. I mean, that's usually the death note for, like, 95% of wrestlers that get into the program with John Cena. So it doesn't make sense to me that you would take Owens and put him into a program with Cena just to squash him in 2 or 3 months. Like, that doesn't, logically, that doesn't make sense. So I believe that there is. It made sense that Owens would win, and it makes sense that he should. I mean, I'm not saying he can never lose to John Cena, but say if they're going to do like a trilogy kind of thing, if he loses the second one and he wins the third, that makes sense. Okay, but to have him, if they go back to the same
old, well, what if he wins,
and that would, sorry,
what
sorry.
If he, what if he wins the first and second one and loses the Cena in the third? Would you be okay with that? Because I'd be okay with that.
But yeah. I think you're still what's the word? You're hedging with Cena. It's still like I want
to
see.
You have to hedge with Cena.
Well, you don't have
to. But
that's the thing. Let me one time legitimately say he put somebody over.
Yeah.
One time.
You're absolutely right about that.
And I
might have used putting over a little bit way too soon.
Loosely,
yeah. But yeah, you're absolutely right.
Yeah, and that's the thing. Like, you know, when Rusev won that first match, I was John Cena put Rusev over. But he didn't put Rusev over. He buried him, just like he did to all the other guys that he's gone with. Just like he did to Tensai or whoever else, like, that the flavor of the month, like Big Man was. Now you got something in Owens that is probably the best thing that they've done since the Shield, in terms of NXT to WWE column. I think I can safely say that he is the best thing that's happened since the Shield came up. Let's say Wyatt family. Okay. But
I mean, but look what they did with Bray Wyatt and Wyatt family, right?
Yeah. And so let's see when this thing is done and it's time for Cena and Owens to go their separate ways. Let's see Owens actually get put over. Let's see Cena finally clean, like no hesitation, no caveats, put somebody over. And let me be happy that I see that. And that would be something that would actually, you know, get some like legitimate respect for John Cena instead of just the, as you like to say, the necessary evil John Cena.
I mean, do you think they're just feeding us table scraps right now? I mean, they get, you know, we're sitting here, you know, under the table getting table scraps this whole time, and every now and then we get thrown a bone. But the very next day, or in this case, the next pay per view, we're back to table scraps again with John Cena. I mean, do you think that's kind of what's going to happen? I mean, and that's the problem that I have, is that because Owens right now is so organic with what he's doing, right? I mean, it's not Kevin Owens' debut. It's not, you know, Kevin Owens is going to be an Intercontinental Champion and see what he can do, and then maybe he can move up into the picture. Right now, everybody watching Kevin Owens, watching him, says this guy. I mean, the whole thing is they steal the show, they steal the pay per view, they steal Raw, or at least Kevin Owens does that segment steals the show there. I mean, we're not even talking about Seth Rollins. We're not even talking about the Authority. You know, it's like this is like a secondary story element to everything. I mean, Kevin Owens and John Cena's taking center stage, but they're putting it in the middle. But then they saw this other stuff at the end. So I mean, what they're doing, I mean, I think it works. I mean, everybody that watches a Kevin Owens match goes, this guy can be in the title picture, not in 4 or 5 months, but next week. And you have these people that are finally buying into this guy. I mean, do you think WWE sees that, are they going to adjust accordingly, or are they just going to follow the script like they always do?
I mean, I think that remains to be seen.
Because this past year,
yeah. Well,
this past year is something that's never happened in WWE.
Well, there's some seeds, right? So, you mentioned the Rollins angle and stuff like that. Like the way that the Raw started out, right? There was definitely some discontent between Seth Rollins and the Authority, and I've seen a little bit of speculation online that like that's like the beginning of the seeds that's going to turn Rollins against the Authority, and they're going to bring Kevin Owens in as the guy, and that could be really interesting. That could make some sense. But if you're going to do that, I really think they need to overhaul the Authority top to bottom. I think J&J would have to go. I think Kane needs to go. You can have one of either Kane or the Big Show, but not both of them. And you need to get some younger, like fresher guys. You got to make the authority something more similar to what the corporation was, right? Not have, you know, have like a few guys that can wrestle. Have a, turn it into a real faction if you're going to have it be something. So, but yeah, I mean, I could see it going in, into some direction like that. I mean, Kevin Owens is really good, and he is the kind of guy that you could bring in, and I think mentality wise, I mean, he's the kind of guy that Triple H would be able to get behind. So I could see them doing something like that, and that would be good, and that would lead to it could lead to an Owens versus Seth Rollins program. Which would be really good too. I mean, I think those guys have a little bit of a history on the independent scene. I think the athletic style that Owens has, you know, he has that real good package of, like, you know, he's this big kind of monster type look, but we've seen he's really agile. He's got like a pretty skilled moveset, and a guy like Rollins has proven that even though he's a smaller guy and, you know, he can do the high fly stuff, he can get into matches with these heavyweights and guys up to as big as Brock Lesnar. And still put on a really good show. So, I mean, I think there's a ton of potential for the match between those two guys.
Well, not even, I mean, I don't want to fanboy here, and I'm not saying this is what you're doing, but, you know, and talking about, programs that can be coming up. But you mentioned those two guys. You still have Samoa Joe, who still hasn't done anything yet. You still have Finn Balor, that's ready to go. You also have Sami Zayn, I think that's ready to go as well.
He's out till October.
Because of injury.
Injured. Don't pick him.
But then you still have Roman Reigns. You still have
Ambrose,
and then you can even say you have a guy like Cesaro. You definitely have Dolph Ziggler. I think you still have Sheamus.
Not even to mention Bray Wyatt.
You've got
Wade Barrett. You can always do something.
I was going to say Wade Barrett. Yeah, still in my Thunder. But now all of a sudden you're looking at this roster. And, you know, we've always said the roster's deep. But, you know, even you know, with Kofi Kingston being in Money in the Bank, you know, like, okay, he's not going to win Money in the Bank. But if you think about it, like, there's a possibility there where you have New Day as a tag team champs. You have Kofi Kingston with the Money in the Bank. I mean, that could be like all of a sudden, if you get all those elements in place, they can be a really, I mean, they're a legit faction now. But now they can be like a really, really strong, legit heel faction. Mm-hmm. So there's elements with there in there as well. And to tell you the truth, I think with New Day, in the next couple months, they can keep on playing heels, but slowly people like them now, and slowly they're going to start having a face run as well. So, I mean, everything, you know, we've always said the roster is deep, but we said roster is deep on terms of potential. Now I think this roster is deep in terms of all those guys I just mentioned. You want me to mention them again? You know, Ambrose, Reigns, Ziggler, Sheamus, Wade Barrett, Bray Wyatt, Kevin Owens, Samoa Joe. You can put John Cena in there as well. Seth Rollins.
Balor.
You know, I don't want to put Ryback in there, but because Ryback is a machine guy. But all of these guys, not only are they good performers, but now their characters are established.
Right.
Now they're not jobbers. You know, they're not jobbing the whole time. Dolph Ziggler's the biggest jobber out of all of them. But the whole thing is that Ziggler is now established. Like, he's not going to get hurt, you know, and I thought you brought up a really good point 2 weeks ago when we talked about,
Lana
joining him, is that he's not going to get hurt by jobbing to people anymore. So I think, you know, he's established. He's a fan favorite. If you give him a push, people are going to be behind him more so than they were 2 years ago when you were saying, or three years ago when you were saying, like, this guy's the next big thing. You know, they should put their hat on him and let him ride. I mean, he's riding right now. Then you throw in like guy like semi jobbers in terms of like Stardust, right? Stardust can still get it done. I think R-Truth over the past, you know, month has been enjoyable to watch. I don't get pissed off when he loses. I thought he showed up really well in the pay-per-view. So you have these guys, you know, you have these established stars. You have like 10 or 15 established guys that their character is protected. They're not gonna get squashed. If they win or lose, you want to see where they can kind of go. And then you kind of have these kind of semi-jobbers with Stardust, with R-Truth, and even, you know, the reemergence of the Wyatt family minus Bray Wyatt. So you have these guys in here that everybody, you know, all these guys are getting established. We haven't even talked about the Divas Division. You know,
you didn't even mention Reigns or Ambrose, and or the.
I did mention Reigns or Ambrose when I said you only say it again.
The first time.
Then you have these tag teams as well that, you know, so everybody is established. There isn't that John Cena pecking order, mm-hmm. right? And the way that I see it is like, okay, if you allow these guys, if you allow to see what happens and they have these programs, and, you know, I haven't even mentioned Brock Lesnar coming back as well. So John Cena is in the mix somewhere, and if John Cena loses to, you know, here's the only problem that I have, right, is that John Cena has lost to Brock Lesnar how many times, right? If he loses to Kevin Owens a lot, right, you have that too. I don't want to see the day where he gets his comeuppance against Brock Lesnar or Kevin Owens, but I think somewhere down the line that's going to happen as well. So we can say be really excited right now, but you always do have that necessary evil, the guy in the background, you know, just going like, okay, I'm, you know, here I am, and, you know, now we're going to have another year of John Cena, but it's not, nothing scripted anymore. You know, there's a script to it, but there's so many.
There's a lot of moving parts.
There's a lot of moving parts, and there's a lot of moving parts that I actually want to see.
Yeah.
I haven't fast-forwarded Raw in a long time. I've pretty much watched every segment, and that's really what you kind of want to have with wrestling. So that's where we are with that.
Did you want to mention either of the Divas matches? Because you briefly mentioned it when you were going through like the depth of the roster and stuff like that. I mean, I don't know if you want to get into that at all. I mean, I thought between the Raw and the pay-per-view, there were two not great, but plus Diva matches, like Diva matches that were worth watching.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I think that's good. I think there's a ton of pressure coming out of NXT for the ladies that are.
What's your name from that? I saw that match.
The Banks match.
Banks. That girl's legit, dude.
it was good, right?
And the girl she was facing was really good too.
Yeah, and Lynch. So I've seen a couple really good Sasha Banks matches. That was the first time I've seen a Becky Lynch match where she stood out as well. So yeah. But I was impressed.
Are you coming around on Paige? Because I thought Paige has had a pretty good 2 weeks.
I don't know. I don't dislike Paige. I really want to like Paige. There's still something that
I just feel
like
about her.
I just feel like something's kind of missing a little bit with her. I think she's good. I think she's very good. I think she deserves to be in the mix for that top spot.
Here's what I have to say about Paige, right?
Okay.
You can't have Paige without the work that AJ Lee did. And I don't think you can have the state of the Divas division right now within WWE and NXT without the work that Paige has done. I know they shot Paige out of the gate right away, and I know you didn't like how she beat AJ Lee after that botched match for the first title. So I know that goes against her, but Paige has done a lot of work in NXT. And, you know, and I think she, you know, when the Divas really started to become legitimized, she was the front person on that. And with AJ Lee being gone, with her leaving, Paige is kind of like the real sound like technician out of that whole group. I don't think you can have the success of Nikki Bella or Naomi without the work that Paige has done. And I don't think you can have that without the work that AJ Lee did before that.
So I'm going to agree with everything you said regarding AJ. I think AJ really set that division up to be something.
But here's the thing though, AJ did it on the mic, dude.
I mean,
AJ never really impressed me that much in the ring. I mean, she was a solid performer, but her shit was kind of weak sometimes, dude.
I mean, considering she was probably like 5'0".
Yeah,
112 pounds soaking wet, right? I thought she wrestled a pretty good style. I thought she adapted what she had physically. I thought she adapted that to make it work in the ring. You know, she was never going to be able to have any kind of like power moveset like Natalya did, for example. But like her Shining Wizard was legit, and then she came up with a really good submission hold.
The idea of her Shining Wizard was legit. It wasn't a legit Shining Wizard. It was okay.
As far as Divas go, it was a legit finisher.
Okay. Okay, yeah, yeah. Can I finish? Can I finish?
Yeah. Oh, you want to go? No. Okay. Yeah. So, yeah. No, it wasn't. I mean, I'm not trying to compare it to you know, Muda or anything
okay,
like that.
Okay, thank you.
But, like, as far as, like, a Divas finisher, that was one that I could buy, right? It was much better than the Page Turner, right? yeah. So, I think, like, I just think, like, and again, I think it's hilarious. All the people that, like, are in love with Paige are probably the same people that are saying, like, Roman Reigns was completely forced down your throat. But Paige was completely forced down my throat, which in some cases I wouldn't necessarily have a problem with, but in terms of watching it on TV, I kind of did.
But not in the bedroom.
No.
Okay.
A
little too pasty for you, right? You'd have to wear sunglasses, right?
I wouldn't have a problem. I wouldn't have a problem making it happen, but I just think, like, how could I say this? If you're having this program with Paige and Diva, with Paige and AJ, and AJ's kind of, like, letting Paige get the rope, which is also another nice image, then I'm fine with that, because AJ is kind of the pro.
With the image or with what you're going to say right now?
With all that.
Okay.
Like, AJ is, like, the person that is kind of taking this young person that has a ton of potential but needs to really refine what she's doing and work and mold it, and I was fine with that. But then once AJ's out of the picture, I don't think Paige is necessarily that superior to Nikki Bella, for example. I don't think she's... I think Banks is better than the Pages right now.
Banks is. She is.
On the mic and in the ring. And so, still keeping Paige as, like, the best diva is kind of, like, still a little bit forced to me. Naomi, I think Naomi's coming along quite a bit. I think Naomi's doing really well, and I think she adds a good element to this. But I don't think, I guess, I'm going to ramble, so I'll cut off what I'm saying, just bottom line it, like Stone Cold here. AJ was good enough to carry a division on her own, and whoever they threw around her was going to work. Paige is not strong enough to carry this division. Paige is, at this point in her career, she should be one of the 3 to 5 divas that they build that division around, but she is in no position to be the dominant force, in my opinion, on that divas division.
But she deserves to be a champion during that time.
Yeah.
Yeah.
If she is, then I don't have a problem with it, and if she's not, I don't want to hear any people crying about it.
Good.
She's not superior to Nikki Bella physically.
I don't think you need to explain anymore. You should have just ended with that.
Okay.
Because it was strong. Yeah, there you go. All right. Let's go ahead and get into, do we do a Hall of Kayfabe first, or we do the Golden Mike?
Generally, we do the Hall.
Okay, we do the Hall. Okay, so I got a guy for the Hall. You don't have anybody for the Hall, right?
I do, but
it's not, okay. You can stash it away and forget about it, and then when it comes time when I don't have anybody for the Hall, you can look up into the sky and try to remember who it was?
Maybe,
okay. The guy I want to put in the Hall, not for what he did in wrestling, but what he did after wrestling, is Stone Cold. I think Stone Cold deserves to be in the Hall of Kayfabe because he's the one that started the whole podcast boom of everything. Like, whenever I want to kill time, I can kill time with any number of podcasts. You have Stone Cold's podcast as well, which is still the best. I don't listen to Jericho's that much. I listen to it once or twice. It just doesn't really interest me. I'll listen to Ross. Ross, once in a blue moon, I'll listen to. But I don't know if you knew this, but Ric Flair now has a podcast.
I did.
Yeah. So basically, it's you know, they try to say, you know, Ric Flair's podcast with guests, say like Bret Hart, which I did listen to. But it's more like Bret Hart's having a conversation with Ric Flair. And it's all the little stories that I've always heard. Like, I've heard all these stories over and over again, yeah. But anytime I can sit there, you know, when I have to walk my dogs and stuff, and I can listen to Ric Flair telling his stories that I've heard a million of times, I'll still listen to it for a million times. And I listened to one with him and Mean Gene. I listened to the one with Bret Hart, and they have like this kind of co-host, the co-host with the co-host or whatever
on the Austin show.
No, on Flair's.
Okay.
And you know, he tries to bring everything back in, but and he tries to say, like, what was your beef, you know, between Bret Hart and Ric Flair, and both of them kind of, you know, Bret Brett kind of glossed over it, you know, because, you know, he was trying to say, like, it was, like, a mis fucking communication, even though, like, both these guys, like, took pot shots on each other, like, you can...
For decades.
Yeah, even, like, and they put it in print, you know, and stuff with Brett's column and Riffler's book, so, I truly believe that they've gotten over whatever they've gotten over, but they never, you know, they let that one go without saying, well, wait a minute, you said this, you said that. You know,
this is like, how I felt.
Yeah, the Montreal screw job when Flair said that, you know, you're full of shit by not doing a job for someone. You know, they didn't do any of that. It was just kind of like a really kind of happy-go-lucky type thing. So they dropped the ball on that, where I really think that Stone Cold really would have got to the bottom of it. And Stone Cold can, because Stone Cold said so. So, but that's the guy I want to put in, just because it's now all of a sudden you can hear any wrestler you want, you know, like... Most of the time, like, you know, you'll see, like, a retired wrestler, and they'll come back, and all their only avenue to, like, be back in the public eye or whatever is if they got inducted to the Hall of Fame. Or like, these shoot interviews where these guys that are doing the shoot interviews are really trying to make a name for themselves and really...
Get them to try to say something.
Yeah, exactly. So now you kind of have this forum where all these guys are making the rounds, and I don't think I appreciate Bret Hart if I don't hear the guy talk on a podcast. And Bret Hart has been very busy on all these. He's done Flair's podcast. He recently did Ross's podcast. Actually, the one that came out this week was with Bret Hart. And, of course, he's done podcasts with Stone Cold as well. So Stone Cold, I think, has given, like, a new lifeline for a ton of wrestling fans that kind of miss the old guys and want to hear from them again.
So... I like the Jericho podcast for the most. I haven't listened to podcasts for a while. The ones that I really liked when I started was Jericho and Austin, and I do find myself gravitating to the Austin podcast, which is funny because I'm much bigger Jericho mark than I am for Austin. But Jericho, you know, I like to hear. I don't mind hearing Jericho's like perspectives on life and different things. I think that's one of the things that makes Jericho interesting, is that he's involved in so many different avenues of, like, entertainment and things like that. But I kind of want to hear a wrestling podcast, and Austin, like, 9 times out of 10 is something to do with wrestling. The other thing, too, is, like, I don't know, Austin, there's something about, like, when he sits down to do this thing, he's like, you just really almost feel like you're, like, the fly on the wall on some, like, conversation, like, Austin's just kind of like, just shoot. Like, you can tell he prepares and he knows, like, the direction of questions he wants to ask, but he's just, like, gets into the conversation and starts shooting the shit, and it's pretty entertaining the way he does it, and his reads on the advertisements are hilarious. And he used to talk about, like, the alpha brain and like, how it's going to help your sex drive and stuff. Like, that just always hella funny. So, yeah, I think Austin, I think his podcast is really good. You know, he's also in The Expendables. So, you're going post-career. One of the main reasons, the last Tough Enough that they had, one of the main reasons I enjoyed watching that show was because I liked watching Steve Austin. And I thought, like, I liked watching his evaluations of these guys. I like the honesty that you get from Steve Austin. If he thinks the guy isn't shit, he's going to say he doesn't think the guy's shit. And you don't always get that, like, with some of these other guys, like, you know, and rightfully so, you know, they don't want to throw anybody under the bus, but, you know, when you know in their mind they're trying to say that guy sucks, and they're like, you know, this guy's got a little bit of work to do. Like, you know, Austin will just straight up, hey, that guy's greener than goose shit. And it's just funny. It's a good show, so it's funny because, you know, I mean, dude, Austin could probably make the Hall of Kayfabe for his wrestling career, and he would be a guy that is atypical, because usually we don't go with the guys that were, like, the number one man in the company. But I mean, you could chronicle the first 20 years of Austin's career, where he was, like, the epitome of a mechanic that was just a job guy, and he was, like, on the classic path to, hey, you remember that Stunning Steve Austin guy? You know, he did this.
He ain't nothing. He ain't nothing.
He's talking about skins all the time.
He's talking about beers all the time.
Yeah. And then, you know, all of a sudden, out of nowhere, you know, just a new tweak to what his character is. And you know, he's the hottest thing going. So, yeah, I mean, I think, you know, inside of the business and then on the periphery of it, he's a really entertaining guy to listen to and to watch.
All right, so let's go ahead and get into the Golden Mike, and this is an interesting one that I want to get your intake on, because once you hear it, you'll know why I want this man over here to kind of give his two cents on it.
Gentlemen, Bret the Hitman Hart, a former World Wrestling Federation champ, and his opponent, Razor Ramon. Welcome, sir. Mr. Ramon.
What?
You have met the Hitman Hart before,
yeah,
have you not?
Yeah.
And it didn't work out all that well for you, did it?
Oh, laugh it up, Gene, man. Yeah.
I'm not laughing at all.
I know the Hitman.
It's a fact.
Shut up. I know the Hitman. Everybody knows the Hitman. He's like a worn-out recording of your favorite song. Time to fast forward. Take a look at the bad guy. The Nutter Center. That's the right name, man, because Hitman, you nuts if you think you're going to beat Razor Ramon.
Bret Hart, this guy gave up to you once before. I mean, that is a fact. That
no
is
way.
A fact.
No way. That's a
fluke. You know, Gene, for the longest time, I've known I'm the number one seed, and I knew that I was going to be ready for the whoever it was that I stepped in the ring with. And now I've got the privilege and the honor of stepping in the ring with Razor Ramon for the second time. But you know something, Razor Ramon? What? Ever since I lost the World Wrestling Federation title, I've only got one thing on my mind, and that means going straight back up to the top.
Oh,
and
yeah?
The fact that it's you standing in my way makes it that much better. Because I can promise you one thing. When I step in the ring with you, I'm going to wipe you up. I'm going to stomp you out and punch your face in. And I can promise you one thing. You will have the sharpshooter put on you. And this time, you'll have to give up right and loud and clear.
Oh, yeah?
I want that uncle real loud.
Yeah,
I want everybody to know that you gave up. Because that's exactly what you're going
to
do.
I don't need
you're
you to give
up,
Chico.
In the Nutter
because
Center,
when I hoist you high above my head for the razor's edge, you won't be able to give up,
Thank
Chico.
You, gentlemen.
You'll be out cold.
Back to more work on the base team for Razor Ramon and Bret the Hitman Hart. They're going to be opening the action at the King of the Ring tournament.
I mean, I think it's a pretty weak promo. Sadly, on both of their behalves.
What?
I don't think Gene was...
Hey, shut up.
I don't think Gene was doing him any favors. He seemed to be talking over them both quite a bit, and like especially Razor, which seemed to maybe mess up Razor's flow a little bit there. But I think it's like a classic early 90s type promo, and mid-90s maybe, and the thing is, I think that's kind of like the middle ground progression from the pre-recorded in-studio promos. Like, this is probably like an early version of a live to before they got to the point where they'd like go stand in the ring with two guys and then kind of go back and forth. So I think you kind of see the growing pains of like a guy like Gene trying to moderate these two guys. You know, nothing too hard-hitting. You know, that was, you know, Bret was kind of struggling on the mic over there. But it did take Bret quite some time to get comfortable and good on the mic. Now, you know, that was kind of in that time where, yeah, he really wasn't very good promo man.
Well, and I think it shows how good Scott Hall was. I mean, you say that he didn't cut that good of a promo on this one. I mean, granted, for what it was, I mean, this was like a, I don't know what the segment was, but they would have like two stars, you know, being interviewed at the same time, and one would cut a promo, the other would combat off that promo. But Razor. That was a heel Razor. It wasn't that far off from what Scott Hall, what really made him at least good for me when the guy on the mic. I thought Scott Hall was one of the best guys on the mic for stuff like this, where he could do a promo like this, but he could go off the cuff. He didn't go off the cuff here, but he could go off the cuff, and he did a lot in WCW. And it was just kind of like it showed really kind of the changing of what the promo was supposed to do, where you had Bret Hart do like the typical baby face, you know, like I'm gonna punch your face in and stuff, and that worked at that time. And Razor's trying to discredit everything that Bret's saying while he's saying it. So I just thought it was a nice little progression. I'm still trying to find a really good Bret Hart. I'm trying to find a good Bret Hart promo because he started cutting some really good ones right before he left WWE. Unfortunately, they're nowhere to be found. So any time I can kind of, you know, Bret Hart's been on my mind, you know, because I can't escape the guy because he's on all these podcasts. So there he was right there. So we have that for our Hall of Kayfabe, or not Hall of Kayfabe, for our Golden Mike. let's talk New Japan Pro Wrestling. And more succinctly, let's talk about Ibushi versus
Ricochet.
Yeah, I was getting there. It takes me a while, but what's your thoughts on Ricochet here? I mean, what do you think about this guy?
I think he's pretty good. Yeah, I've been watching him as Prince Puma in Lucha Underground for for a couple of months, and I think he's put on some pretty good matches there. I'm not the biggest fan of luchador wrestling. It's well documented here on this podcast, but he's really athletic. He's got a lot of pretty creative moves. I think watching him in the couple matches that they showed on New Japan, I think he does a lot more. I think the mask is kind of good for him. I wouldn't like his facial expressions in some of these New Japan, like his eyes are always bugging out and kind of has this kind of goofball smile like quite a bit into these, you know, pretty intense matches, which I think it's going to kill him from being like a real top number one guy, but I mean, it's not taken away from the matches per se. But I thought they were both of the matches, especially that Ibushi one, were great matches. And he's got a lot of creative moves that for a guy that's kind of like a high flyer, they're believable. They're not a bunch of, he's got enough size that I can buy pretty much all the moves that he's pulling off. It's not like watching like a true luchador wrestling. So I think Ricochet, you know, he's good.
Well, we first got introduced to Ibushi when he fought Nakamura, and I kind of felt watching the Nakamura match that Ibushi was just a high spot, you know, highlight reel. You know, there's a ton of high spots, stuff that really doesn't make sense. You know, it's kind of a like the opera of a luchador doing all these moves that are kind of, you know, that you really need to suspend your belief to believe this match could actually happen with this guy's doing all these flips. What I liked about the Ibushi match with Nakamura was that in the beginning Ibushi was doing this crazy stuff, and then he started, when he got down to wrestling and started kind of playing off against Nakamura, then all of a sudden these moves really started working. Ricochet, I kind of felt the same way. He faced what's his name, the time splitter guy, the week before
Kushida.
And actually I thought the Kushida match that played this week with Shelley, I think Alex Shelley is just one of these guys that he's never going to make it on his own, but he makes everybody else around him look a lot better.
He's a future Hall of K-paper.
yeah. But the thing is, so they went against those two other guys.
The Young Bucks.
Yeah, and the first time I saw them wrestle, I didn't like the Young Bucks at all. But I really felt that the Time Splitters really brought the best in the Young Bucks. I've been watching them like, well, these kids are actually like some pretty good, legit heel type tag team.
A lot of really good double team moves.
Yeah, it was just, you know, they showed what they could do. It was within the frame of the match. I thought it was really good. And then you have the Ibushi match with Ricochet, and it's kind of the same thing when Ricochet won the Super J Cup against what's his name, Kushida?
Yeah.
Okay. So I got his name right. Right. Me being the Japanese fallen Japanese wrestling. That I do. I have to ask you what the guy's name is. What's that guy's name, G?
At least we're actually talking about Japan wrestling.
Yeah. But it wasn't until Ricochet did the kind of the 450 senton that I was hooked. I was like, okay. I'm like, now this guy has something now. And then when he did that 450 senton, then the match really started picking up. So
that, and like I really like that Northern Lights into the Brainbuster.
Yeah,
that's a really good combo too.
So, and then going into that, when he fought Ibushi, I was kind of hesitant with that match as well, because I saw the Ricochet match previously. I was like, I wonder if it's going to be a high spot fest. And there was some high spot stuff in there, but really that they had probably the, you know, you talked about, you know, that could be the match of the year as well, but I'm not sure when that match was. So
it was last year.
But they probably had one of the best segments I've ever seen. Like, I'm going to remember this segment for a long time. So, you know, Ricochet is hanging out. You know, he's just sitting around, hanging out on the top rope, you know, just eating a hot dog or something like that. And then Ibushi does a springboard Frankensteiner. And what was so good about that segment was that, so Ibushi does this crazy skill set just to
do a, you know, he jumps on the top rope, jumps off the top rope, lands on Ricochet, does a Frankensteiner, like, to perfection. Ricochet flips, lands on his feet, and right then and there, the crowd just, they don't know what to do, because, like, they're, I mean, even me, like, I'm going crazy off what Ibushi just did, and Ricochet tops him in a span of, like, 2 seconds, and everybody's just, like, sitting there going, like, what the hell just happened?
Yeah.
And then Ricochet goes into his Northline Suplex Brainbuster combo, and then I think he goes into his finisher after that. So, you know, like, I'm getting goosebumps right now just thinking about it, but it's like that 30 seconds right there, I'm just thinking, like, what the hell did I just see? I'm like, I have never seen a wrestling match like this. Like, you know, the only time I've ever seen any type of wrestling match like this was when we'd get all your old G.I. Joes, and we would have, like, we'd do our, like, our wrestling promotion with your G.I. Joe guys, and we'd do these crazy moves that we knew nobody could ever do. Like, you know, some of these guys had finishers we knew that none of these guys can do. Well, this is the first time where I'm watching a match going, like, you know what? That's something that I would do when I was, like, you know, when I was, like, 10 or 11 with these G.I. Joe guys. Now I'm seeing it for real, and I was in a state of shock. I couldn't believe it. I thought it was one of the best. I mean, it is probably one of the best moves I have ever seen, or move segments I've seen in a long time, and I was blown away by it.
So there's that, and then, like, the other thing that was really impressing me, and they're kind of playing off it too, the announcers, but, like, that, Ibushi, yeah, Ibushi's striking ability, like, with the, they keep going to the karate background that he has, but he's got, like, a couple really nice, like, and they're really quick flurries of, like,
yeah,
kicks and chops and punches, and I just really liked it. Like, they look very stiff, and they just came, like, really quickly, and I'm like, they all look like legitimately painful strikes. But then, you know, you had that whole spot that you're talking about, and then Ricochet kind of comes back and still has a chance to where you think he might win the match. And then Ibushi comes with, I don't even know what to call that finisher.
It's a Phoenix Plex.
The Phoenix Plex, and that was legitimate, man. Like, he just, like, locked him up. Like, I don't know where he's going with it. Almost looked like he's going to do some kind of package move. And then basically, like, you know, suplexes him over and does a cradle pin. And that was just an awesome finish.
So here I am talking about that segment, and then I totally forgot about the Phoenix Plex until you just mentioned it right now. But, you know, the beginning of the match, we can't even say it started off slow. I mean, it was a case where they're, like, feeling each other out.
Yeah, the previous week's match when it was Ricochet again, that one started off slow. But this one was just, like, an old-school, like, pace kind of match. And then that was what I really liked about it. Yeah. I think maybe what it was with the Kushida and Ricochet match, you're watching, like, the slow beginning, and you're like, well, I know these guys are supposed to be pretty good, and I see a lot of ability, but when's something going to happen? And then with the way that match ended, like, it kind of, like, okay, now I know what this guy does, right? So then this time around, watching a Ricochet match for the second time, there was no, like, question or anticipation, like, what's this guy going to do, and when's this thing going to pick up? Like, I know this guy can kick it into high gear quickly, and you just kind of enjoyed it and waited for it to happen.
Well, even so with the Ricochet match with Ibushi, and what I liked about that match was that I had some questions about Ibushi, whether he could carry a match or not. You know, I was just wondering, is this guy just going to be a high spot guy or whatever it was? The two things that stood out for me with Ricochet over the past 2 weeks was Kushida did a springboard out into the on the floor, because Ricochet was on the floor. But
is that the one when he jumped over the post?
Yeah.
Ricochet jumps over the
post. Yeah, Ricochet jumped. That's what I was saying. I was going to bring that one up too.
Sorry.
But when Kushida did it, what I don't think anybody saw was that the table was right there. Like, their announce table was, like, right there. And the only way that Kushida can pull that off is what Ricochet had to take the hit and had to take the fall without putting Kushida in harm's way with hitting the table. Ricochet did not hit the table as well. So Ricochet, like, to me, as a technician, really showed me right then. That's when the light switch turned on for me. I was like, that was a very hard spot to do. I mean, 9.9 out of 10 times that spot gets bumped up, and someone gets hurt off of that hit. But the table didn't get touched. Nobody touched the table. Ricochet should have touched that table just on the sheer impact alone, but he took the brunt of the force of that jump. They both fell, like, right next to the table. And I'm just sitting there going, like, that's a good job right there.
See, that's the newfound respect of having Bret Hart around. that you're getting, you know, for the ability the ability to not get their opponents hurt.
That has nothing to do with Bret Hart. I respect Bret Hart for why he thinks that, but I respect the idea that Bret has about that. No, but that to me really opened my eyes to Ricochet. Okay, this guy isn't some.
He's not just a spot monkey.
Exactly. Yeah. And then of course in the Ibushi match, you know he dives over the corner post, does like a senton over the corner post, and I was going okay because there's still some question with that match. I didn't know if Ibushi could pull off a match without like a guy like Nakamura to reel him back in. I thought it was going to be like a spot monkey fest, you know, like crazy, and I wouldn't like that match. But the second that Ricochet jumped over that turnbuckle, I was like, all right, this match is for real. And then they just have a monster match. That was by far. I haven't seen Tanahashi versus Okada. You keep on telling me to see that one, but I kind of have a problem because any Nakamura match that I see is my favorite match. But that was definitely on par. I miss Nakamura. I miss Okada. I don't miss Tanahashi too much, but I miss watching Nakamura. Over the past 2 weeks of watching of Ricochet being in the ending match for both of them, even with a guy like Kushida, I have respect for, is just that don't make that guy talk. Don't let him talk about the match
with his derby.
It kind of reminded me of your son Logan with that derby, you know.
Hey, it's a fedora, right?
Fedora, yeah. It's the same thing, whatever it is. But Ibushi match and Ricochet match is right up there with watching any Nakamura match, and it did the job.
Fair enough.
All right, so last one, Hard Home, Game of Thrones. Would you? First of all, so there has to be some. So basically, everything that's happening right now is basically a spoiler for people that read the books, because everything that's happened with Tyrion and Daenerys, that's
supposed to be in the next book, maybe.
I have no idea, but that's like the whole thing. It's like, first of all, I want to put up that scene where both of them are sitting down and they're talking about, you know, breaking the wheel and all that stuff and smashing the wheel or whatever it was. Just that, even the segment when Jorah and Tyrion are talking to Daenerys, and Daenerys, like, you know, doles out her judgment. I'm going to put Tyrion and Daenerys' conversation, I'm going to put that up with the conversation that Pacino and De Niro have in Heat. Same type of setup where both of these people are just acting their asses off, and the result was great.
Yeah.
Okay. So let's go on to the next thing.
It's really good. I'm finally, you know, Tyrion's such a good character and interesting character, and you know has been so like. You know, had every bad obstacle put in his way possible, and it's finally like kind of good to see something good happen to him, and like see him link up with someone that is gonna just like use him for what he's good at, which is his mind and his practicality and how to deal with things. Like he's like, well, yeah, there's the way that it should be done, and then there's the way that it needs to be done when you go to King's Landing. And finally, like, someone appreciates that knowledge. And the fact that it's, like, one of my favorite characters in the show, like, that makes it even better. So, yeah.
And I was just waiting to say, like, tell her that you're, like, the, when you're the hand of the king, you pretty much, like, you ran the table and you, like, had everything set in line, and then your dad came in and messed it all up. But, you know.
Well, even that, even just, like, the not even that conversation, right? But like the way that we started off the whole thing was like, well, I don't even know if you deserve my services yet. Was like, you know, he didn't come in and start like glad handing her like right from the beginning. Like, you know, he pretty much told her like, you know, I know what the hell I'm doing, and like, you know, whatever assistance I can give you is of value, and I'm not like some slave dude that's just here to kiss your ass, right? And I think he approached the whole thing the right way. He didn't come in like a sycophant. He came in like, I know who you are, you know, I respect you, but, you know, I'm not going to just sit here and blow smoke up your ass. And I thought that was a good way to handle that.
So just like the Ibushi and Ricochet match, that wasn't even the best part of the episode. This is
every season of Game of Thrones has its defining episode, right? I mean, that started off with Eddard getting his head chopped off. You have the fight at King's Landing. You have the Red Wedding. Hardhome, the last 15 minutes, was one of the most intense TV shows I've seen in a long time. And really set the stage. It really showed that the White Walkers are like the big threat. Not all these little games that they have in King's Landing and stuff, but this is really what the problem is. And I just wanted to get your thoughts on just the White Walkers themselves and that whole white segment and everything.
This is pretty crazy. I thought the giant was awesome in that episode. So that little thing with Game of Thrones does is, like, they're so good at, like, building characters that they can even kind of get you, like, within, like, one 20-minute segment of a show, like, full-on invested in a character. Then, of course, like, they fucking kill him. Yeah. Like, I really like that lady, right?
Yeah.
Like, she was cool, and, like, something about her was like, yeah, like, this girl, like, knows, like, this girl's like a warrior.
And the second she kisses her kids and says, I'm right behind you, you're like, ah, fuck.
Right? And so, there's that, and then, like, I don't know if this was, like, supposed to be symbolism or anything like that, but, like, there's, like, a little scene right before they kind of, like, headed for the water when the snow started coming in, and they kind of did, like, this big, like splash picture where you kind of look back and you see the whole army and, like, on top of the mountain, right? Four horsemen, right?
Yeah.
That's what it's supposed to be. Is
yeah, that was brought up in my household when we, when it was like, oh, it's the four horsemen. I'm like,
I just wanted to hear that horse whinny in the back with the...
And yet you have the White King or the King Ice, whatever, doing the woo, you know.
Yeah.
I may be the oldest White Walker, but I have the longest line or something like that.
They look like they fit right in on Space Mountain.
Yeah.
Maybe more Matterhorn, but...
Matterhorn, yeah. Yeah, Matt. Nobody will go on the Matterhorn with me and my family, either, except my youngest daughter does. But everybody else, they don't like it because it's scary.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. So, that, I mean, the last 15 minutes was just...
Yeah.
Just intense as all hell.
And then, yeah, I was a little bit thrown off because I didn't know what that sword that he picked up, right? So I had to ask this lady, like was that sword Dragonglass? And she's like, no, that's Valyrian steel. So now it's like, Valyrian steel does in the White Walkers. Yeah,
that was Mormont's old sword, remember?
It was.
Remember Mormont gave that to Jon Snow?
Okay, so yeah, I didn't pick up on where that, because, and then we went back for the Dragonglass, and I saw him drop his sword, and he was falling around, and then when he picked it up, I didn't know that it was his. I thought, was that Dragonglass or something? What was that? So, but that's, like, I think probably a pretty vital bit of information going forward onto the show. Now, who are the Valyrians? That's where Varys is from? Is that right?
I don't know if it was where they were from. Basically, the Valyria was kind of a... It was kind of like a whole... You know, it was like a culture, but it was kind of like, you know, like the dwarves in Lord of the Rings,
uh-huh.
where they dug too far in the mountain.
Mm-hmm.
So basically what happened was, like, all the volcanoes in that area, like, erupted at the same time, and the whole civilization got wiped out. And I think the Targaryens... was a small household in Valyria, and they survived, and because someone had a vision and they decided to leave before it happened.
So then, like, is there, like, a short supply of Valyrian steel left in the world, or?
Yeah, because Valyrian steel can only be made, like, through magic, and right now it's not chronicled. Nobody knows how to make Valyrian steel, so I really think the way to go is, and that's brought up a lot of people on the internet going, like, well, who has Valyrian steel? Brienne has Valyrian steel that got, because that was Eddard Stark's sword that got melted down.
It did seem to me that was
so. She has Valyrian steel, but then the other person that had Valyrian steel was King Joffrey, and that's buried with King Joffrey.
They didn't give that to the
no. So They gave it to
Kingslayer. The Kingslayer. Yeah, yeah. He didn't have one half.
But he gave it to Brienne.
Oh, that's what she had. Okay, okay.
Right. Man, but the other person that has Valyrian steel too is Arya has Valyrian steel.
Needle,
I believe, is made out of Valyrian steel.
Interesting.
Yeah. So, and that's a whole other scope with Arya.
With the oysters and the cockles.
Yeah, and all that stuff too. So that's a whole other storyline as well. And that's a pretty interesting storyline. Like in the book, it's very, very slow play with her in the book. Like, she's not involved with anybody. She's learning how to be an assassin. And so that's always kind of a great thing. Like, well, is she becoming an assassin so she can kill all these people? Or is she going to become an assassin so she can follow the many-headed god? Is she going to be like a sycophant for the many-headed god? So that's kind of up in the air. But I'm just waiting for her to come back and just start wiping people out. But yeah, she's a really good character that hasn't even been touched yet.
Speaking of having been touched, 2 weeks ago I liked that scene with the sand snakes and the breasts. I don't know if they were fake or not. If you think they are, you don't have to spoil it for me. But that was a great scene in the prison.
Where the breasts were fake?
I don't no, not that one.
Those are real, man.
Yeah, that's the scene I'm talking about.
Okay,
her and.
Brand.
The cell sword, right?
Guys, forget it. I can't remember these guys' names, but yeah.
The cell sword.
Yeah.
Yeah, so I don't know, is that kind of like, almost like a hint that, because it seems like he's a really funny character, and he seems like he likes to go around and womanize and whatnot, but it also almost kind of seems like he's kind of looking for like a serious chick somewhere, right? And I almost got like a feeling like they might have something going. So I don't know. Like, she could have just been playing him. I don't know that much about the sand snakes. Seems like it would be in their nature to tease men, but I don't know. That scene was kind of funny to me.
Yeah, and then he started getting sick and stuff and everything.
Yeah.
So he's no longer in the books. I mean, he's like off in some kingdom. He's going to marry some lower.
Yeah, the one that he was promised to marry for.
So that whole sand snake. I mean, that whole thing with Jaime being over there. That doesn't happen.
Braun, is that his name?
Braun is his name, yeah. So, Braun is his name. Not to be confused with Braun in Transformers, who met an inglorious death in the movie. But that whole thing, Jaime is not in Dorne. I mean, I think he's traveling to Dorne, like in the books, or he's going somewhere. But at this point in time, he's not there. So everything is just, for all the book readers, they're just flipping out. They're just getting pissed off because they don't.
They're getting mad.
Because it's like now all of a sudden they don't know what's going on, and
they can't hold it over everybody else's head.
Yeah, but I've never done that with you, Don. No. Don't put me in that. Yeah, but it's kind of like my wife would be like, well, what happens here, or what, like when the first couple seasons, she's like, well, what's happening here, and I was like, well, it's because of this, it's because of that, because of this. Now she asked me, I was like, dude, I have no clue what's going on. I know the general story, but yeah, I have no clue. So. I'll give one little teaser away, or one little spoiler away. I'm just going to say one word over the next two episodes. It's going to be dragons. And I'll just leave it at that. And I might be wrong because it's been so different before, but we'll just leave it off on dragons. All right.
I would rather leave it off on the breast of that sand snake. But
yeah.
That's another.
That's another
story for another time.
That's when you're all alone. Yeah. Yeah. And you're talking about. AJ giving pages a rub and stuff or anything, So, we're at movie scale number 112. Damn, an hour and a half, dude. How did we do this already? So, I have Better Have My Donuts over here on Bad News Ramen, and we will check you guys out next week.
Sand snake breasts. We'll be right back.